you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
Very good morning to you. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Coming up later this hour, the imminent closing of the Sears in Boyle Heights, Los Angeles. It has been a mainstay of the community for generations. And as that Sears closes its doors in a matter of weeks, we'll hear from listeners as they talk about what comes next. That Sears also part of a very large warehouse complex, which is a landmark. You see it as you drive along the central LA freeway interchanges. It's been a big part of that community. How many of us have picked up items at that warehouse over the years or shopped at that Sears? I raise my hand. But I want to extend it as well beyond Boyle Heights to talk about other communities in Southern California where you saw stores that were, you know, central to the community, part of its identity, its fabric, which also closed, and what the loss of that store has meant to you. That's later this hour on Air Talk. In a similar vein, we turn our attention to neighborhoods now and the hyper-local social media app Nextdoor, which is highly polarizing. For some people, they love it as a way of keeping up with their neighbors, finding out about different activities, sharing concerns about potential rises in crime, getting a sense of how they can help each other with various projects at their home. But for others, it can feel very exclusionary and a source of gossip, or for political commentary that they don't feel is particularly helpful and in some cases is racist. Joining us to talk about the future of Nextdoor, whose CEO has said that they are going to make some significant changes, is Ariel Pardes, senior writer at Wired, who writes on technology and our human relationship to it. Ariel, thanks very much for joining us. You wrote about this a few months ago at the height of the street protests, part of the Black Lives Matter movement. And what was coming out about Nextdoor at that time?
Well, Larry, as you said, Nextdoor has always been a platform that is very polarizing. It's faced criticism for years about stoking racial profiling. More recently, people have called this Nextdoor's Karen problem. And this really came to a head last year in the wake of protests about racial injustice across America. Nextdoor, like many other companies, had put out a statement saying, Black Lives Matter. We support our Black users. And they really caught flack on both sides. On the one hand, plenty of people said, hey, this platform has contributed directly to over-policing, to racial profiling, and to people of color not feeling safe in their own neighborhoods. But meanwhile, a number of moderators on Nextdoor were actively deleting posts that mentioned the phrase Black Lives Matter, which I'm sure you can see how that undermines the company's message that it supports its Black users.
And what are the role that moderators play in this process of determining, you know, which communications, which posts are able to stay and which ones go?
Yeah, the moderators on Nextdoor are a pretty unique role. They're called neighborhood leads on the platform. And these are actually just people who were the first to join the platform in their own neighborhood. But they have the same powers as moderators on a platform, like Reddit or Facebook, which include taking down posts, deciding what posts comply to the local norms and rules. And so this has led to some difficulties with some Nextdoor neighborhoods where moderators and the people who live in their neighborhoods are really at odds over what they think is right or is what constitutes racism, safety, and all kinds of problems like that.
Well, and I could see where even beyond racial issues, political content, personal gossip about, I mean, there are a lot of ways this can go sideways.
Absolutely. And, you know, unlike a platform like Facebook or Twitter or Reddit, where I think people at this point acknowledge that, you know, there are a lot of people out there who have unsavory beliefs that they want to share on the internet, Nextdoor is a platform for people who live down the street. And so you can understand how, you know, a user who's reading things that their neighbors are writing could begin to feel very uncomfortable knowing that someone who lives very, very close perhaps believes, you know, things that they consider to be, you know, racist.
One of the things anecdotally that I've been hearing about, and this may be true other parts of the country, is sort of how people characterize homelessness and perceived threat from people that are homeless being in their community or adjacent to their communities. This has been a real source of friction on Nextdoor here. Is that a national issue?
Yes, I would say so. I mean, I live in Northern California, so it's very much an issue up here. And look, Nextdoor isn't just a place where people are posting, you know, things for their neighbors to see. It's a platform that also has partnerships with law enforcement. And so one of the things that's really come to a head in the last year, but is, you know, also a recurring criticism of Nextdoor, is that if you turn people into sort of neighborhood vigilantes and invite them to police their neighborhoods based on their own biases or their own beliefs, you can really end up in this sticky situation where, you know, neighborhoods are actually being over-policed by the police. You know, if somebody reports that there's a suspicious person, you know, walking around in their neighborhood, and that's someone who's a person of color or a person who's experiencing homelessness, and then the cops actually show up, I mean, you can understand how these have, you know, real-world consequences and can exacerbate tensions in neighborhoods that
well,
exist.
I would assume, and perhaps I'm wrong, but the nature of individuals who are the heaviest users of Nextdoor are people who are, you know, most concerned about things like neighborhood protection, things like that. My guess would be that the bias is largely going to be for more of a police presence and neighborhood watches and more things that are going to keep their property safe. Isn't that kind of baked into this?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I don't think that's the original intention of the platform, but it's certainly the case that the part of the platform for crime and safety reports is the most hyperactive. You know, plenty of people also use Nextdoor for things like finding a babysitter or, you know, posting things for sale or inviting people to a community event. But the reputation, and one that I think is justified, is that you know, by and large, this is an app that's being used to report on things like crime and safety in ways that can sometimes spin out of control.
And, quote, suspicious persons. And of course, that opens a lot of concerning doors. We're talking with Ariel Pardes, who is senior writer at Wired. We're talking about Nextdoor. And I'd like to hear from you your thoughts about the leads, how the neighborhood leads, which are really moderators, the decisions that they make. If you are one, what degree of training did you get? How do you make decisions about which comments you leave or take down? How do you try and moderate the kinds of conversations that you think might portray certain people, certain neighbors, or certain other individuals in ways that are unfair or racist? We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org, to share your thoughts about this. I'm going to let you go, Ariel, but just real quickly, what is Nextdoor specifically going to do with the leads to give them more training or more direction?
Yeah, it's a great question. So up until last year, there really was no training for someone who wanted to be a neighborhood lead on Nextdoor. And rightly so, they recognized that that was an area they could improve on. So it announced that it would offer unconscious bias training for its moderators to help people understand, you know, what kinds of decisions they should be making and what things they should be taking into an account when they either take down a post or, you know, moderate other things on the platform. Nextdoor has also taken some other steps, you know, within the design of the platform itself to reduce some of the things that it believes have contributed to instances of racism. So it's got rid of a feature called Forward to the Police, which is exactly what it sounds like. And it's also taken some more steps to recruit more neighborhood leads and users who reflect the demographics of the neighborhood, encouraging people to, you know, take on the work of, you know, communicating in their own neighborhoods in a way that reflects the people who actually live there.
Ariel, thank you very much. We appreciate your being with us.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Ariel Pardes of Wired joining us. We reached out to Nextdoor to join us in the conversation, but as of today, we have not received a response from them on it. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Our producer, Matt D'Angelo Antonio, saying it's the same way on Twitch. Once you're chosen as a moderator by the broadcaster who runs the Twitch channel, you're just a mod. You kind of have to figure it out on your own. It's very much learn by example. Roy in L.A. writes on the page, some of the moderators are crummy. I'll replace his word. There's one in my neighborhood who lets personal bias dictate what posts or comments they can delete. Angela writes on the page, I got summarily booted off Nextdoor years ago. I wear that fact as a badge of honor. I don't miss the app. The people are bossy, nosy, crazy. I prefer to be blithely unaware of whether someone, quote, suspicious, is walking down the sidewalk. That's Angela writing on the AirTalk page. Joining us now is writer Relinda Harvey Smith, who wrote an op-ed for the Los Angeles Times middle of last year, in which she described being on Nextdoor in her neighborhood and the ugliness toward African-American residents. Relinda, thank you very much for being with us. Briefly share your experience.
Well, I love Nextdoor. Initially, I used it for many years, even before I wrote the article. There were always kind of hints of racism, hints of unconscious bias, and those weren't things that I was especially sensitive to. I'd been black long enough to have encountered, you know, things like that throughout my life. But I think what happened on May 31st in Santa Monica, when there were some protests here, and I saw kind of an uptick on the site of people warning each other about the protest and then starting to use some inflammatory racist language about roaches and thugs and animals and just using terms that traditionally have been used to dehumanize African Americans. So that really, like, put my antlers up to really, like, write about it and want to have a conversation about it. And so what I wrote was essentially an open letter to Nextdoor about what was going on and what was their responsibility to our community, which is, I live in Santa Monica, so it's mostly white. Only, like, 4% of the residents are African American. So just to let them know that these things alienate people from the app, and we're not able to get the most out of the app because we have to deal with all of these other things in the way.
You write about some of the great things. I think you said a neighbor came and fixed your front headlight after you were asking for a referral for someone to hire to do it, and positive stuff, but that it's tainted with the kinds of racist references that you experience. Did you reach out to the lead or the moderator about some of this language?
No, I actually didn't. I actually posted on the app, and I just was really kind of backing up, which was another resident in the community that decided to call it out. And I was just backing them up and saying, you know, using these terms are racist, saying all lives matter is not appropriate, and really trying to describe why. And it just was a challenge to say, okay, I have to spend my time to do this just to use a neighborhood app in peace. So something about that just didn't feel right, that no one at the company level was able to notice these things and kind of just kind of mitigate, like, a situation that had turned the neighborhood sort of into the wild, wild west. So it was no one to say, hey, this is wrong. So it was really challenging on the app to see how many people just, you know, even though they seemed well-intentioned, were coming off very racist.
Do you still use Nextdoor for the positive stuff, or is this so tainted that you feel like it's just too uncomfortable to use now?
No, I still use it. I still use it. I think it's like any place else. You know, you really have to, like, guard how you use it. And like I said in the article, just not go down, like, the rabbit hole of the ugly. Like, you can already see, like, political conversations and different conversations that come up that I already know that I can't engage with. So I just use it for what I need to use it for, and I basically get off. But, I mean, I think overall it's very useful, but I think there's just always been questions about how the app is moderated and how it can just be a safe space for anyone who wants to use it.
We're talking with Relinda Harvey-Smith, Santa Monica-based writer, who wrote an opinion piece in the Los Angeles Times first-person account of using her neighborhood's Nextdoor social media app and some of the ugliness that she found on it, this during the time of the protests that included the streets of Santa Monica. Nextdoor just sent us this statement, perfect timing, and I'll read a portion of it. It's too lengthy to read in its entirety. Our purpose at Nextdoor is to cultivate a kinder world where neighbors can rely on one another, where all feel welcome. As a community-building platform, we explicitly prohibit racism, discrimination, or hate speech of any kind and take this issue extraordinarily seriously. Our anti-racism task force, working with outside bias and social justice experts and academics, has been hard at work updating community guidelines, building products, and putting diversity at the fore, adding to our boards and employee base. In an effort to ensure neighborhoods on Nextdoor reflect the diversity of neighborhoods in real life, we have taken several important steps, which it goes on to lay out. Pledge globally, which defines the behaviors that are expected, the values of the communities we're helping to build, accepting a pledge to use Nextdoor, improve community moderation by launching a supplement to the Neighborhood Leads program with a new community reviewer role. Since then, we've added over 100,000 community reviewers, and in partnership with the new Quo, Nextdoor has launched an online course specifically for neighborhood leads and community reviewers that provides tools on inclusive moderation and anti-bias education. Relinda Harvey-Smith, your thoughts about the response from Nextdoor?
I think that, I mean, when I wrote the article, they reached out to me as well, and this was in June, so it was just, I think, more so at the beginning of their efforts. So I think that them making an effort to address this is really all we can ask. And how it works, I think, is you know, just remains to be seen. Like, I admire them for doing something about it, because I do think the responsibility does lie in the company to create a safe space for everyone to use the app.
I'd love to hear from listeners who are leads or moderators. If you have seen any evidence of this kind of training, of the kind of higher-level moderation that's mentioned in this Nextdoor statement, we're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. I'm interested in hearing your experiences of using the hyperlocal neighborhood social media app Nextdoor, 866-893-5722. We have another guest who we'll be talking with momentarily. We'll be back in just 1 minute. Nextdoor, the hyperlocal social media app, our focus on Air Talk and concerns about the kinds of conversations and references that take place there that exclude some people who live in communities that use language that's racist or accusatory. And the company has said that it's making significant changes to address that. If you're a lead or a moderator or someone who is a frequent user of Nextdoor, I'd like to hear whether you think there are changes that have occurred. Has the tone of Nextdoor changed at all in what you've seen? 866-893-KPECC. Joining me is Will Payne, Rutgers University Assistant Professor of Geographic Information Science. He researches spatial data and urban inequality. Thank you, Professor Payne, for joining us. What do you think are the most important things Nextdoor could do to address the concerns about this dark side of it?
Thank you, Larry. So I think it's great that they're having this conversation now, but I want to think a little bit in terms of the structure of these platforms and kind of how some of the very basic choices they've made to have the primary role of leads and then these community reviewers be volunteers. And I think similar to a lot of other platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, also in the local review space, sites like Yelp that rely on free reviewers, there's a limit to how much you can change behavior of people that you don't pay a salary to. So I think in the past, you know, they've seen a lot of, you know, back in the Bay Area. So I researched this in Northern California and looking at the way that communities of color had problems with racial profiling far before 2020 on Nextdoor. And the solution, because, you know, I think now this idea of doing the automated, the implicit bias training is a great step. At the time, it was much more, well, you know, we're going to have an automated solution. So if we detect that someone's posting about race, then we're going to say, you know, you might want to talk about something else or mention, you know, articles of clothing if you're identifying someone. So they have this kind of approach where they're sort of trying to combine this automated idea about how to flag these issues with human labor. And I think it's just worthwhile to contrast that to something like COVID disinformation and misinformation, where they actually, you know, because there's been a lot of issues there with people posting things about vaccines, posting things about the virus. And there, when you flag something as COVID misinformation on Nextdoor, they explicitly say that that goes to paid employees within the kind of Nextdoor hierarchy, not to leads, because they can't ensure that these ordinary people are going to follow, you know, CDC guidelines, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the challenge would be if you're opening it up to sort of any report of quote suspicious persons or security fears that people have on Nextdoor, the volume of material that you'd have for someone at, you know, a central location to be going through would be tremendous. And you know, the positive, I guess, of Nextdoor would seem to be it's this way of convening neighbors to talk about stuff. The downside is some neighbors are going to be crazy. Some neighbors are going to be outwardly hostile, misanthropic, racist. If you're going to have something that really is sort of reflective of what it's like for neighbors to get together and talk, is there realistically a way of screening out the stuff that is corrosive?
Yeah, I don't think without spending a lot more money on moderation, which, you know, there's been a lot of work on that elsewhere. One thing I think that you mentioned is, you know, these are neighborhoods. I don't think the neighborhood is necessarily a kind of safe space for everyone in this country. You know, I think this idea of the kind of warm and fuzzy vibes of the word neighborhood, one of the sort of case studies I looked at is the Western Addition neighborhood in San Francisco. And that was a very thriving African-American neighborhood of the Fillmore, torn apart by urban renewal. And I was looking at the, you know, these next door neighborhoods, which can be quite small. And some posts are limited in visibility to people within a given neighborhood. And a few of the neighborhoods were sites of urban renewal, you know, kind of new condo buildings that had gone in. And so basically what you see, if you look on a map, is that, you know, this building that has maybe, you know, upper income professionals, they're not part of the rest of the Western Addition. They're, you know, 801 Post or 22 Van Ness, whatever the name of the building is. And so I think there's a way that, like homeowners associations, like gated communities, you know, there can be this dual valence of the hyperlocal. You know, is it just putting up new fences, but on, you know, on the internet as well?
All right. Again, I'd love to hear from those of you that are leads or moderators or have been so on Nextdoor. What, if any, changes do you see? And if you are a user, someone who participates on Nextdoor, the social media app, what's that experience like? I'd be interested in hearing. Julie writes, I do use Nextdoor for the neighborly stuff, specifically lost pets and the like. I don't read comments about, quote, suspicious people, and I don't discuss politics. That's Julie in the Valley writing on the Air Talk page. I mean, it is sort of a thing, you know, let me go back to Relinda Harvey Smith about this. You know, if I was just stopping to talk as I do with my neighbors on the street while walking the dog or whatever. You know, if it turns to politics or they want to talk about some crazy COVID theory or something like that, you know, I'll change the subject. I'll deflect. If fortunately my neighbors don't tend to do that, but if they did, I would deflect. And I wonder, is it possible on Nextdoor to sort of avoid the areas that have this dark part of it, to just take advantage of the positive stuff, similarly to as you would in a real world conversation?
Absolutely. I mean, that's how I'm choosing to engage with the app now, because it does have a lot of good. So I do use it for the good, and I sort of avoid, you know, the political conversations. But I think at the moment in time, for me, when I wrote the article, it was really, like, pervasive throughout the app, because things were going on in the community, and a lot of it had to do with Black Lives Matter and just race and social justice. So a lot of those opinions would just
everywhere
go through it in order to get to anything.
Yeah.
Just at that moment in time, it was difficult to ignore.
And so when it was so what you're describing sounds very, very stressful and hurtful. Did you just finally just not go on it for a period of time?
Yeah, for a while I just, you know, until things calmed down, I just didn't go on. But, you know, eventually I just went back to the app, because it did have a lot to offer. And I agree with the other speaker, is that the being a lead on Nextdoor seemed to just lend itself to a certain type of person, especially at the time when I was using the app. So the paid volunteer is going to be a certain type of person that's not going to really be inclusive of anyone that it could be in the community. So I just felt like those things being filtered through that lens were not reflective of the community.
Susan in Long Beach says, I find it very divisive. I think the leads are very prejudiced in my neighborhood. During the election, our Nextdoor page became too political. I find myself, thinking this is just not supposed to be a political platform. I ended up in Nextdoor jail, she said, for responding to a political comment. And the way they talk about homelessness is dehumanizing. You can share your comments on the AirTalk page, kpecc.org, and let us know what you think. My thanks to Relinda Harvey-Smith, a writer who wrote on the opinion pages of the Los Angeles Times a piece last year, I'm the Black Person Nextdoor, trying to sort the site's value from its ugliness. And my thanks to our other guests joining us as well, including Professor Will Payne of Rutgers University and senior writer at Wired, Ariel Pardis. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. So glad to have you with us. Coming up, we're going to talk about the closing of the longstanding Sears store in Boyle Heights. It closes its doors next month. It's part of a much larger building with that Sears sign visible throughout much of central Los Angeles. We'll talk about what it means to that community. And I also want to hear from you. If you had a store that was around for years that closed in your community, share with us what that loss is like and what you miss about that store. We'll remember it during this half hour of Air Talk. 866-893-KPECC. We'll be back in a minute.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.